The Google Podcast app is going away in April. Right now, I want you to take a look at the podcast app you're using right now. Maybe it's time for a new one. Check out podcastapps.com and try a new one for free right now. That's podcastapps.com.
I'm Cameron Passmore, the executive chairman of PWL Capital, and I'm also co-host of the Rational Reminder podcast, and I'm ready to start digging deep with Mark.
Welcome to Digging Deep, presented by Zen Books and Abacus Data. I'm Mark Sutcliffe, and I'm on a quest to learn from the best. So many years ago, probably 17 or 18 years ago now, I was doing a radio show, and I was involved in a couple of business ventures, and I received an email from someone I didn't know. It was very politely worded. I remember that to this day. And the person emailing me asked if I'd be willing to meet and perhaps provide some advice about marketing and about doing some advertising on the radio. And I said yes, because I like to be helpful and because many, many people have said yes to me when I've sent similar emails asking for help or advice. And so that's how I met Cameron Passmore. At the time, Cameron was a portfolio manager with PWL Capital. And we had a great conversation. And I gave him some advice for whatever it was worth on his advertising and marketing. And we ended up getting to know each other better. And then I ended up helping him more with the marketing for PWL Capital. And the more I learned about Cameron and about PWL, the more I liked their approach. So I became a client. And Cameron and I have been friends ever since then. Now, Cameron takes a very different approach from a lot of other people in the investment world. He's not what you picture when you think of a financial advisor. And frankly, that's what impressed me. He doesn't promise to pick winning stocks or outperform the market. He doesn't claim to have some special knowledge or intuition. And the more I observed this, the more I realized that much of what we hear about the financial markets just doesn't make any sense. There are a lot of false claims. And here's the bottom line. Nobody, whether it's in the financial markets or in any other arena, can predict the future. We're going to talk about some of that in our conversation today. I think it applies to more than just the markets. We're also going to share a lot about Cameron's journey because in the intervening time, he's become very successful. He's now the majority owner and executive chairman of PWL Capital. And the number of clients and the value of the investments that he manages and the firm manages has grown exponentially since way back when we met. And part of that story is that Cameron had a moment of luck. That's how he describes it. When he met some of the senior people at Shopify very early on in the history of that company as they were building their business, and he ended up becoming their advisor and the advisor to many of their rapidly growing list of employees, many of whom became millionaires. So that's a big part of Cameron's success. Another big part of Cameron's story is that along with his colleague, Ben Felix, he launched a podcast that has become hugely successful. It's had more than 1 million downloads. It's called Rational Reminder. We will talk a little bit about that today as well. Our conversation takes us all the way from a butcher shop to a 100-year plan for Cameron's business with stops along the way to talk about setting goals, building good daily habits, and how one email changed his life. He explains why, instead of following your passion right away, you should start with what you're good at, and why you should never believe someone who tells you that they can predict the future. We talk about taking care of people and how that should apply to your employees just as much as it does to your customers. Why so many of us are trying to climb a ladder on a wall that's on fire, and why, from time to time, he feels the need to send me a screen grab of his email inbox. And we will talk about the importance of luck, especially why you can't just sit around waiting for it to happen. I think you will find this a very thought-provoking conversation. One last thing before we get started, I would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to this podcast and also post a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to my weekly newsletter, The Weekly Dig. It's a very quick 2-minute read with 5 really useful lessons that you can apply to your life and your work. Lots of people are reading it every week and enjoying it. So please give it a try. You can subscribe at letsdigdeep.com. That's letsdigdeep.com. Now, let's start digging deep with the executive chairman of PWL Capital and the co-host of the Rational Reminder podcast, Cameron Passmore. Cameron, it is great to welcome you to Digging Deep. I've really been looking forward to our conversation. And I should mention off the bat that you and I know each other pretty well. I'm a client of PWL Capital. For many years, I was involved in helping you do your marketing as well. And I was also a guest on the Rational Reminder podcast many years ago before you had a kajillion listeners and downloads. So we've had many conversations, but I'm excited about this one. Thank you for doing this today.
And not only many conversations, Mark, but we've actually done a fair bit of running together.
That's true. In fact, 10 years ago, we ran the Disney Half Marathon in Orlando, Florida together.
It was incredible. And then we started the New York City Marathon together.
That's right. Yeah.
We did not end it together. I didn't want to take away any of Mark's glory, but we did start it together. And boy, that was a cold morning waiting for hours at the start line.
Yeah. I remember we met outside my hotel, I think, near the New York Public Library at about, I must have been 4 o'clock in the morning or something, and then boarded the buses, which take you out to the start line. And you realize as you're on the bus that you're going to have to run all the way back. And it's like a 40-minute bus ride in a bus. So you realize just how far it's going to be when you're running. But that was a great day too. Yeah.
Certainly was.
All right, let's jump in and start by getting to know you a little better. What is your fondest childhood memory?
So I knew these questions, of course, being an avid listener. And I've been thinking about this one for a while. And growing up, when I was very young, I had a paper route. And every Saturday, my father would help me and do half the deliveries. And after deliveries on Saturday, we would go to the local diner in town. I grew up in a small town in Quebec. And it was called the Doghouse. And I remember going to this little diner that had that classic U-shaped big counter. I remember going with him every Saturday and I sat with all the regulars from town and learned about all their different occupations they have. So that's what I fondly remember.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Doing that with your dad and then being around all those other people. And I
remember the characters
son...
even to this day. Like there's the furniture delivery guy. There's the hardware store guy. There's the antique guy. There's the auctioneer. Like you remember all these personalities. And I was 8, 9, 10 years old.
That's great. I sometimes take my son to a diner in our neighborhood and it's kind of the same dynamic there. Who was your hero when you were 10 years old?
So I was 10 in 1976. Of course, it was the Fonz. Every Tuesday night, rush home from Cubs to see the Fonz. And I even had the t-shirt that was way too small and I was perhaps a little chunky. So I had to wear the Fonz shirt every Tuesday night.
Okay. And did you ever watch Happy Days as an adult and realize just how terrible a show it was? Because I remember watching it. It came on, sometime when I was in my 20s and I thought, oh, it's Happy Days. I loved this show when I was a kid and I watched it and it was just brutal.
Yes. Same with Gilligan's Island. Not nearly as funny 40 years later.
Yeah. Not nearly as funny when you're not 11. Yeah. The Fonz. Right on. Okay. What did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
I didn't know, but I always knew I wanted to be in business. From that paper route, for example, just learning service and tips and even my mother teaching me what a accounts receivable was. And she wasn't an accountant, but every time people would skip a week from paying you, you felt like you weren't making money until they paid you all those weeks at once. Because that was back in the days when you went around with the hole punch.
Yeah.
Remember, if you had a paper route.
You had to collect. And that's what it was called, right? You had to collect from the customers. Yeah.
Every Monday night. Yeah. So my dad would say every Monday night, 6:30, you got to go out and say, no, when you're going to get there. And you were just consistent every single week.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, you knew you were going to be in business. That's a good thing. What's your life story in 6 words?
Take care of people and they'll come back.
Take care of people and they'll come back.
And I think about that in both business, but also now that, we're running a company, you take care of the employees and they'll keep coming back. So take care of people and they'll come back.
I like that. For what do you feel most grateful?
Well, you could probably guess this one, just knowing our story. But 10 years ago, I got an email that really changed my life and changed our company's life when the great people from Shopify reached out. So I got lucky that that happened and I was able to seize that opportunity.
Right. So just the moment that you got connected to the folks at Shopify and your worlds intersected and you've kind of, you've both grown tremendously since then, obviously, right?
And that's the real story is that we're able to kind of keep up to what they were doing. This is long before Shopify was what it is today.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I are both fortunate. I'm not sure I've benefited from it as much as you have, but we're both fortunate that we knew the Shopify people very early on. I remember meeting Harley Finkelstein from Shopify, who's a guest on this podcast previously. I met him and they still had an office over a restaurant in the Byward Market in Ottawa. I think Harley was talking about, we hope to get to 100 employees by the end of this year. And they've moved a couple of times since then and obviously had explosive growth, but great story.
That's the year and the place that I met them also.
Yeah. What's been the best year of your life so far and why?
I would say last year, 2021, and I'm kind of the person that I think every year gets better, but many things for a better future happened in 2021, just family and my kids who, you know, just growing up and figuring stuff out, you know, relationships. And then also we went through a big reorganization of our company. So the next phase of our company evolution also came into place last year.
Right on. And that was a big step for you. You became the majority owner of PWL Capital last year. Something we can come back to this, but something I don't think that was necessarily always in your plans, right? But it just worked out.
Yeah, but once you start thinking about, because I'm really just a vessel for the future of the company. So I ended up becoming kind of the catalyst that could pull us together. And now we're working on a plan for the next generation to take it to what is going to become from here. And that's one of the big lessons is that the next generation has so much talent that if you can pull together really driven, smart people and help them keep creating something, not get out of the way, but help them, like what this can become is unbelievable.
Yeah. I love that theme that you've picked up on there, because you're from our conversations before, I have this sense that, you know, so many people, when they become the owner of something, whether it's a business or something else, they think of it as, you know, this is mine now. And you see yourself very much as a custodian of this business for a period of time, and then it'll be somebody else's, right?
Unequivocally, this is not about me. This is about, you know, 100-year vision. This is not about selling out. And this has been a big evolution over the past couple of years. You know, I think about a number of people that we've met on the podcast where really help you articulate and figure out what's important to you. And once you realize what is important, like going back to take care of people and then we'll return, it's so important to me that this whole mission continues and that others can benefit in their own way as this goes forward. So this is not a me story at all.
Yeah. Good for you. What's been the toughest year of your life so far?
2003, I was 37 years old and my father was diagnosed with leukemia, and it was, the experience was obviously brutal, but it kind of kicked off a period of 4 years where we had a fair amount of illness in close family members. So, but 2003 was by far the toughest year for me.
What one person has had the greatest impact on your life?
So going back to business, I mean, my parents had planted the seeds of kind of the numeracy of business. And even though they weren't business people, but I applied for a job at a local butcher shop in town and I worked for the owner, who was a family friend named Robert. So he had a huge impact just in being open with me. And I was young. I was like 12, maybe 13. I remember exactly where I was in the store. And I remember the day where I said, how much revenue does this business do a year? Like I was fascinated with that part of business. And he thought it's about $2 million a year, because I didn't know if it was $2 million, $200 million. I didn't know numbers at all, right?
Yeah.
I only had a paper route. And he said, $2 million. So I was on, do the math. Okay, that's like $40,000 a week. That's, you know, $6,000 a day. And I started thinking, okay, that must be like 150 people a day. Like automatically, that's where my brain went. And ever since then, I've kind of had this fascination with, okay, if that's the numbers you need to make a business, how do you find that many people? And he was always so good at enabling me to observe what he was thinking about in running a business. And again, I was young, but I say, how do you do things to get people to come in the front door to buy the groceries and the vegetables and the meat? And what are you doing to try to get them to buy more? And what do you do to, and it wasn't about selling, it was about providing that experience. Like the butcher shop to me was much like Cheers, right?
Yeah.
And then again, at a young age, he says, I'd like you to be one of the head butchers. Like, I didn't know how to cut a cow. Like, what did I know? He said, no, the other guys can do that for you, but I want you to serve the people. So I became really obsessed with client service and this whole thing about, like, I knew when Dave was coming, Dave liked thick cut pork chops with the tenderloin part to his. I put some aside knowing Dave would come in every Saturday at 1:30. Right. So,
wow.
It was that loop, right, of building a system, providing great customer service that would drive revenue. I was just so taken by that whole circle.
Fascinating. What's the most important lesson you've learned that you would share with other people?
Be ready when luck hits. Luck will hit. There's so much randomness. If you think about your life, like the illustration of a tree, for example, and you look up to the tree, you see all these branches coming out of the top. Well, you don't know which branch you're going to take. And there's so much randomness. And so many people, when you talk to them about how their life went, there's always, well, I got lucky. And my case, yeah, got lucky and connected with Shopify. I got lucky when I reached out to you probably 15, 18, 20 years ago. And you happened to say, yeah, let's go for breakfast at Moe's. Like, you didn't know me from, but that was pure luck. You didn't know who I was, but these connections and these random events happen, and it's to be ready when luck hits.
Yeah. I remember that. You emailed me and said, and I remember the subject line. It said something like a conversation, maybe some advice, something like that was the subject line. And you reached out and said, you just wanted to chat. And I've always had this attitude that, if somebody reaches out to me and wants to have a conversation, I'm always open to that, because so many people have done that for me. I've reached out to people, business, successful business people, mentors in the media world and in business. And they've always been very generous with their time. So I thought, okay, I'll have breakfast with this guy. And then here we are. It's probably, you're right, it's probably 18 years later now, something like that.
And the thing that about that, it was legitimate. I wasn't trying to sell you anything.
Yeah.
I was really curious, because you seemed like a reasonable, decent guy that had some media profile. And I wanted to figure out, was that a legitimate strategy for us to consider? So it was a legitimate reach.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's important, is you have to approach those meetings with curiosity and genuinely be looking for information and advice. Most people are happy to give advice. They're less excited if it's you're getting pitched something, right? And then, that's a different kind of discussion.
Yep.
What would most people be surprised to learn about you, do you think?
Oh, this is an easy one for me. So Robert's brother owned, again, small town, owned a slaughterhouse. So periodically I would get the call to go and work on the kill floor.
Okay.
So this is not a typical modern facility by any stretch. We'll leave the details out, but.
So yeah. You were slaughtering animals for meat.
Yes. Again, yeah. Very young. You'd never, we probably broke every law in the book back then, let alone today. But this is long time ago.
And you're not a vegetarian.
Remarkably, no. I'm going in that direction more so. Like, yeah. I'm cutting down on meat consumption, but.
Yeah. What's your secret talent?
Back to the numbers. I kind of run these numbers all the time in my head. I'm always taking a number. Like, if you tell me an annual number, I'm breaking it down to what is that per month, per day, per client, per whatever. That's going on in my head all the time.
Yeah, for sure. I've noticed that so many times. What's your boldest prediction for the future? Which is an interesting question to ask you, because we're going to talk later about how hard it is to predict the future, despite what we think.
Almost a prediction or a hope, but my hope is that people become better equipped to know and realize what a good life is for them, and not just remain on the hedonic treadmill. But once you understand where happiness and fulfillment comes from, and you're clear on your values, I think so much of what people spend time on is often climbing a ladder on a wall that's on fire.
Wow. Yeah. Climbing a ladder on a wall that's on fire. Yeah. I like that.
Like what's the point? And our experience, we met so many people that if I have X in a portfolio, I want 2X.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the X is. You can pick 100,000, 500,000, you can go all the way up you want.
Yeah.
So many people, and this is society wide, right? Just it's more.
Well, you get to see people when they're thinking about their future, and but what's interesting is, as you just said, that you would think when someone's sitting down with you as a financial advisor that they're laying out their goals and figuring out how they can generate enough money to achieve their goals and sleep well at night feeling secure. But there are all these other criteria that enter in that are probably not relevant, but are serving some kind of obsession they have or some expectation they think they should meet or whatever, right? There's a lot of that going on.
And even goal setting, like it's well known that people don't really know what they want.
Yeah.
And they don't, like, you have no idea what you're going to be like in 5, 10, 20 years. So that evolves too. But you can end up on this more, more, more thing, as opposed to understanding like what's important to you, what is enough, what your values are. Understand like, how did you form your goals? Like so many people in our industry, you might say, tell me how much you want per month when you turn 65, I'll run the math. Anybody can run the math on that kind of financial plan, but what is important to you? What are your true goals? What are your true values?
Yeah.
Goal formation is actually quite a fascinating topic.
Hmm. Okay, let's come back to that. What would be the message of your commencement address if you were speaking to a group of students today?
Don't follow your passion. Start with what you're good at. Understand what the world needs and what you can get paid for. Again, know your values. Appreciate luck. Play the long game. Be curious. Try stuff. Realize your daily habits will make you who you are long term. Daily habits are so important, like James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
Those little daily habits, so powerful.
Yeah. That's all great advice. What's been a recent epiphany for you? Has there been a discovery or something you've changed your mind about?
I just read the book called Stolen Focus by Johan Hari, which takes a look at the serious problem we have of people's attention being stolen. And it's typically a technology story, right? Like my kids are on TikTok endlessly. It's and people blame it on things like that. That's part of it, and technology accelerating it. But there's so many other things going on around us that is causing our focus to be stolen. Things like diet that's high in sugar and high in fat, lack of sleep, stress, addictions, coffee consumption is soaring. Alcohol consumption is up, implosion of long form reading, therefore very little deep thinking. And what this is causing is people are not getting into flow as much, because when you're just doing infinite scrolling, you're not eating well, you're just not into this place of flow. Like the average person is on their phone, I think 3.5 hours a day. Now, some of that's podcasting and good learning, but you know, phone consumption is up, clicking is up. And what is being lost is that deep sense of flow where you're able to get into something for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, completely uninterrupted. The average worker in North America right now at work is interrupted every 3 minutes.
Wow.
How do you get into flow in an environment like that? And if you don't have flow, you're missing a great opportunity for fulfillment.
Yeah, you're not doing your best work, and you're not feeling that fulfillment. It's kind of like shallow breathing versus deep breathing. Right? Like we're just constantly breathing in a shallow way, almost hyperventilating, instead of taking those deep breaths that are going to fill up our lungs.
And you're also relying on opinion makers to help you form your opinion, because it's faster and easier.
Yeah.
Kind of like you and I talked about Thinking Fast and Slow, the book by Danny Kahneman. Like it's just, that makes it easier to consume the information. So I'll follow the opinion thinkers without doing a deep dive to understand.
Yeah. Now, is there a book that you are most likely to recommend to others?
Wow.
You read a lot of books.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot. and that's been a great gift. Probably The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. I think everybody should read that. I mean, it is about money and saving, but his perspective and how he writes is simply brilliant. And his blog is brilliant. He writes roughly once a month. He was on with Tim Ferriss a couple of weeks ago, which was a great interview. And he's been on with us a couple of times also.
Cool. All right. I haven't read that book. I'll check it out.
Must read.
Cameron, thank you for answering those questions. We are going to take a short break, and then we will continue digging deep with the executive chairman of PWL Capital and the co-host of the Rational Reminder podcast, Cameron Passmore. We're just going to take a quick break so I can tell you a little bit more about the presenting sponsor of Digging Deep, ZenBooks. ZenBooks is Canada's go-to cloud accounting firm. They are not your typical accounting firm. I know the founders, Colin and Eric. I've worked with them for several years. And here's why I think you should consider working with them too. First of all, they bring a fresh, unique, modern approach to what is a very old-fashioned industry. These guys were working remotely and in the cloud long before it became cool. ZenBooks also uses technology to your advantage. I think this is really important. They give you the tools and analysis you need to monitor your business in real time. That's so valuable right now when everything changes so quickly. Yes, they're a virtual accounting firm, but that doesn't mean they're offshore, and it doesn't mean they're inattentive. ZenBooks combines the efficiency and effectiveness of a cloud accounting service with all the benefits that you'd want from a trusted advisor, high-level advice, and strategic support. Now, here's what I think is going to happen if you work with ZenBooks. You'll probably start out taking advantage of their cutting-edge cloud accounting solutions, but in the long run, I think you'll stay with them because of their strategic guidance and problem-solving. Among their core values, they specifically list being candid and proactive. Isn't that exactly what you want from a trusted advisor? Look, even if you're already working with an accountant or a bookkeeper, or you have some accounting staff on your team, I think you should still talk to ZenBooks and learn more about their tools and their expertise. Check out ZenBooks at zenbooks.ca. That's zenbooks.ca. Digging Deep is all about helping you make better decisions, and so is Abacus Data. Most leaders struggle to connect with and engage their audiences. Why is that? It's because they aren't sure how they think and feel and how they will react. Abacus Data can give you the strategic insights you need to make better decisions and to make them confidently. Here's a good example. A major national union was recently negotiating a new agreement for its thousands of members. This had the potential to be a very difficult process. There were many competing interests. So they brought in Abacus Data to conduct thorough and detailed research of their members to learn exactly where they stood, what they were thinking, what they wanted. And as a result, they were able to secure a strong new deal that was accepted overwhelmingly in a national vote. Abacus Data helps all of its clients understand what's really happening in the minds of their employees, clients, and stakeholders. They help them avoid costly blind spots. And they're really good at what they do. In fact, Abacus Data was one of the most accurate pollsters in the 2019 Canadian federal election. Make the one decision that will improve all of your other decisions. Let Abacus Data help you move forward with confidence and clarity. Go to abacusdata.ca. That's abacusdata.ca. Cameron, once again, it's great to be chatting with you, as always, but especially this time for the Digging Deep podcast. And before we get into so many themes that I want to cover with you, including your story and how you ended up in this business, I wanted to ask you, how many emails are there in your inbox right now? Can you check?
This is a running joke between Mark and I right now. it's up a bit. Four.
Four emails in your inbox. That's pretty bad.
Sorry, I let you down.
I know. So I'm not in good shape right now. I'm at 703, but I have been as low as 90 something, during the period when you and I have been kind of having this running conversation about it. But I did just get back from being away for a couple of weeks. So there's that going on. I'm not going to make excuses, but, how is it that you are able to get down to zero so often? Cause I can never get down quite that low.
I'm a little compulsive about it. And I don't hide them all in little subfolders either. Like I'm pretty good. I try to handle things once.
Right. Touch it once. That I love that philosophy. Yeah.
Touch it once. I don't use emails as a saving mechanism. Like I have other systems in place. I'm also in our day-to-day world, I'm out of a lot of the conversations that would have had a lot more back and forths.
Right.
We have a team in place and my role has evolved. So the email flow has reduced a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm still pretty compulsive about keeping it low.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, I'm not saying this because like I do respect you for having that. And I aspire to be in the same place because I want to be as diligent and compulsive about it as you are. Because that's my inclination as well. But I'm going to say you and I are probably on the other side of a line where you don't really need to, like, you don't need your inbox to be at zero. It's kind of like that thing of if you've never missed a flight, you're spending too much time in airports, right? Do you know that thought process? Like, yep. So, you know, you don't need your inbox to be at zero. It doesn't have to be. You might be, depending on the person, if your inbox is always at zero, you might be spending too much time on your email and not enough time on other things. I'm not saying that of you because I know how disciplined you are about everything, anyway, I just love the fact that you're able to keep it that low. And you occasionally will text me a screen capture when it is at zero. So thank you for that. So I wanted to say, like, I think it's fair to describe you as an introvert, right? Is that an accurate description?
Yeah. I mean, I think different people have different definitions of that. Like I enjoy people. I just don't enjoy big events where I don't know a lot of people.
Yeah.
To go out for breakfast with you and Ginny, for example, would be wonderful. To go to a dinner party with 15 other couples and I don't know 13, that's a hard pass for me.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't think they're going to be interesting people. It's just,
the format for you. Right. Yeah. I feel the same way. I think you're probably more that way than I am, but I'm inclined that way as well. But, is it fair to say that your industry, like the financial services sector, that it's more likely to be populated by people who are not introverts? Because I have this sense that it sort of attracts a lot of people who are more the, you know, what we would describe as kind of the typical salesperson. Let's put it that way.
That's a really interesting question and something that I've got a pretty strong opinion on. And it goes back to kind of the investment philosophy, which I know we don't want to get, I don't think, too technical on that, but I believe there's a lot of type A personalities that have a very high desire to be right and to show that they're right. And their value proposition is them being right in predicting the direction of the markets, picking the stocks, picking the alternative investment, whatever it happens to be, and get compensated for selling, not for servicing. Because the industry, typically, the bigger you are a producer, the bigger the revenue that comes in, the more you can get paid.
Yeah. So it does tend to attract those people, as you say, who want to be right and who want to profit from being right and think it's possible to be right about the future and to pick individual stocks and pick winners, not losers, and that type of thing, right? It sort of, the whole system is almost designed to attract those kind of people, right?
I believe so. I don't have the data to back me up, but I mean, I think you have to look at where the money is. Like, it's in active high expense ratio, active mutual funds and active stock picking. And in the US, you know, Robinhood type accounts where you've got gamification of picking stocks. Like, there's this whole thing about wanting to be above average. And like, mathematically, we all can't be above average.
Yeah. So how did you end up in this business, and how did you end up being successful in this business if you're not the prototype?
So the brief story is Butcher goes to university, Butcher graduates from university.
You finished slaughtering the animals.
I finished the animals. I got in the car, went to Montreal, got into McGill miraculously, got through McGill, and then there's a recruiting on campus, of course. So one of the big meat packers came to town, came to the university, and okay, business grad who's a butcher, you're hired on the spot. Like, it was literally 2 minutes. Like, I had the offer like the next day, typed up offer. And so I took the job. Like, this is unbelievable. I get like paid every week, like some unbelievable amount of money and a company car.
Wow.
Which was like, I thought I won the lottery.
Yeah.
And 2 years of doing that, which was a great experience, but I realized hard to add value to an animal carcass. Like, it's a commodity, right?
I think that might be the title for this episode. It's hard to add value to an animal carcass.
But it's true. So I was going restaurant to restaurant selling our wares. And yeah, you get to know and build a relationship. But at the end of the day, these are commodities and had to be price sensitive. You could fight quality all you want. Yes, I believed our bacon was better. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
And then ended up getting presented with, that's when David Chilton and The Wealthy Barber came out.
Yep.
Right. I know you've had David on, and the whole mutual fund revolution, independent advisors. So I ended up retooling myself, became licensed in, I don't know, a couple weekends. Crazy to think, but I was all of a sudden selling mutual funds. This would be 1991.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything. My framework was, the person that attracted me to the business, if you can do it, I can do it. And we went out and sold mutual funds. Don't get hung up on what the investment philosophy is. You didn't care about fees. All you cared about was making your, I think we tried to, was it $5,000 a month? So again, you do 5,000 divided by 0.04. So I have to sell like whatever, $125,000 in mutual funds a month to make ends meet. That was right. All I had to do.
And then that's when you started to learn about the industry and realize, and you and I have had dozens and dozens of conversations about this over the years, but you realized all the flaws in this sort of standard approach to investing, right?
Yeah, I found myself in a Cheers bar, the Cheers bar in Boston. Ended up sitting with the, I think it was the chief executive of Fidelity Investments Canada. And he said to me, this was 95, 96, he said, if you don't go fee-based, you are going to be dead, because he predicted that fee-based is going to sweep the industry. So I came home very afraid for our future and said, we have to go fee-based. So we all of a sudden...
And just to be clear, fee-based is where the client pays the advisor a fee for
right.
the services, rather than the advisor getting a commission on the products that he or she is selling, right?
Right. The platform you're on is able to charge the client a fee as opposed to being paid by some buried fee in the product.
Yeah.
So as soon as you go that route, okay, I'm not being paid by the product. I mean, the lights just go off. It's like, oh my God, I can look at anything, including, God forbid, indexing. Because we used to be trained against indexing because, of course, index funds don't pay any commission. So we couldn't sell it. Therefore, we couldn't recommend it. So once you're unencumbered from the compensation, you can look at anything. And that's where, you know, I was introduced to, you know, people at PWL back in 96, 97, who had this platform in place. And that's how that whole story started.
Yeah. And to be clear, index funds are funds that are basically just tied to the performance of the market overall. And because of that, there's not a lot of management, not a lot of decisions to be made. So the fees can be really low. Fees are often what cuts into people's returns. So it's a lower cost, lower risk strategy. And this is where, you know, one of the first conversations you and I ever had, you talked about taking an evidence-based approach to things. And how did you kind of arrive there? And why is it so hard in some industries, including one that, you know, you would think this is money, this is our, this is one of our most important resources in life, but people seem reluctant to look at the evidence.
Or they're not aware of the evidence in many cases.
Yeah.
So this whole transition happened when ETFs are really getting going. And Canada was a world leader in implementing ETFs back in the late 90s, if you can believe it. And so we were right at that point where our company was heavily involved in, you know, organizing ETF conferences and trying to get that evidence out there. And it was very, very slow. And it's still remarkably slow. And even a lot of people, a lot of advisors today use ETFs to be market timing or tactical, or they have it in there just because their clients are asking for it. But the world is still awash in all sorts of active strategies. But people just, in my opinion, they're not aware of the evidence and they don't look at the evidence dispassionately to say, okay, what does make sense? I mean, people have been studying, Nobel laureates have been studying the sources of returns from capital markets since before you and I were born. Like, that's all they have done, is where do returns come from?
Yeah.
And you can now build a beautifully diversified, you know, risk managed portfolio for, you know, 10, 20, 30 basis points, like 0.1, 0.2, 0.3% management fee. It's truly remarkable, regardless of the size of your account. It's not scaled by size of your account. And if you can do it yourself, you should. If you need an advisor, have an advisor. Pay the advisor separately for whatever you think their value proposition is worth.
Yeah.
Right? It only makes sense to disentangle the advice from the product. But it is truly astonishing to me that more people don't embrace this framework. But our framework would not work if the whole world went indexing, this might not work.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But there's a fundamental thing at play there, which I think it speaks to human nature and so many other things, which is that expectation that I can beat the market and I can predict the future and that I can have some specialized knowledge that allows me to select certain stocks because I know they're going to perform better, even though those stocks are currently priced based on what everybody knows about those stocks, right? So, like, to use an analogy from sports, if Sidney Crosby is a junior hockey player, you know, before his career in the NHL starts, it's not like I watch Sidney Crosby play and think this guy's going to be a superstar. Everybody already knows he's going to be a superstar. So therefore, whatever I could buy Sidney Crosby for, if he were a stock, is already built into his price, right? So, but people sort of have this idea that they can, and this is where it clicked for me when you and I were having these early conversations, is I realized, like, why would I, you know, spending an hour a week on my own investment portfolio, or even an hour a day, if I did do that, which I didn't, but if I even committed an hour a day to managing my own portfolio, or I had somebody manage it for me who spent an hour a day or an hour a week on my behalf here in Ottawa, Canada, why would that person be able to outperform, or why would I be able to outsmart the sum total of all the other investors in the world, including the people in New York and London and Tokyo, who are spending all of their time on this day in and day out and have access to the most up-to-date and advanced knowledge on everything that's going on in the markets? And I'm going to just, sitting in my basement for an hour a week, I'm going to outperform that? It just doesn't make any sense.
Remember, the number was 100 million trades per day. That's number of trades, not number of stocks, number of trades per day. That's a lot of willing trading that's happening. Every trade, every stock has to clear. Every stock has to be owned by someone all the time.
Yeah.
So there's buyers and sellers. So every time you show up to do a trade, there's someone on the other side of that trade who is likely not very stupid.
Right.
And to think that you're going to persistently beat that, I just think it's a fool's game.
Yeah.
But the good news is you don't have to, because there's information that has been learned over decades about where certain parts of the market do have higher expected returns. So you don't have to beat the market. Just capture what is there. Go buy an index fund. It's basically free. And this gets back to my early comments about enough. Like, what do you need to have the kind of life that you want in the future? Is earning a little bit more and taking the risk of picking the right stocks really going to change your life that much? But yeah, what if you're wrong? And as you manage more money, we know that people dislike volatility in dollar terms, not percentage terms. Like, it's one thing to lose 10% of your portfolio when you have $10,000. It's another thing when you've got $1 million, right? So you have to make sure you know what you're doing. And there's incredible evidence over the decades that is available for consumption.
Yeah.
How to build a great portfolio.
And it's impossible to predict the future. And you should not believe anybody who says they can, or anybody who has some special intuition about the future. And that's true in any field, by the way, not just the financial markets. There, you know, we see this over and over again that people
Someone make that
prediction. Oh, I mean, yeah.
It's just randomness, right? If you get enough people out there, of course someone's going to get that far right-hand tail.
Yeah.
But to know that it's skill versus luck, you need decades of information to have a confidence level to say, aha, Mark is the one that can do it. You may have gotten lucky, Mark, and picked Apple 20 years ago and hung on. Okay. I can show you lots of articles that said the iPhone is going to flop.
Sure.
You could have been the one that held Amazon when it dropped, whatever it was, 80, 90% multiple times. Maybe you were the one that did it. Maybe.
Yeah. And it's the analogy I always used was, you know, you could walk into a football stadium where there's 50,000 people watching the game, and you could stand in the middle of the field with a coin. You could get everybody to say, okay, you know, are you predicting heads or tails on this coin toss? Flip the coin. Everybody who got it wrong, sit down, right? Everybody who got it right, keep standing up. You flip the coin again. You keep doing that. Probably in that stadium with 50,000 people, there's going to be somebody who gets it right 10 times in a row, maybe even 20 times in a row, which is incredible to get it right 20 times in a row. The problem is, how could you know which of the 50,000 people was going to get it right before we started flipping the coin, right? Of course, in 50,000 people, there's going to be somebody who gets it right 10 times in a row, but that's just luck. And it's the same. And it's been proven that in the financial industry, of course, if there are hundreds of thousands of people making investment decisions on behalf of their clients, buying mutual funds or even managing mutual funds, of course, there are going to be people who have a great return 5-10 years in a row. But how do you know which one it's going to be before that starts? And how do you know that it's not just the coin toss?
You also need a strategy for life, right? I mean, we lived enough successful managers through the 90s where, okay, you think you found one, you allocate money to them, and all they've switched companies, all they've retired, all they've sold out, or they're taken over. And the beautiful part about the framework that we believe in is you can take that framework with you. It's very cheap, very tax efficient, low turnover. You're not relying on some hot manager to do any choosing. You've chosen the exact allocation that works for you.
So once you sort of discovered all of this, you know, how did it change the way you thought about everything? Because I can tell you, for me, it changed the way I thought about a lot of things. And I'm not in your business every day, but it just did make me think about all the flaws we have in our thinking. And you mentioned Danny Kahneman, you know, and the work that he did with Amos Tversky on heuristics and all the logical fallacies and all of the things that, you know, how our brains trick us into making bad decisions, basically. But how did it change the way you thought about everything?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, it was a tremendous relief. We felt much better about our value proposition and continue to, because as you know, with our podcast, we do deep dives into all areas of this subject each week. And it's amazing. Here we are 30 years later. And it's an incredibly robust framework to use, which is extremely liberating. Like, the cognitive overhead that goes away from having to choose managers. And if you think about the logistics of our business, right? If you have to change a manager, there's a huge amount of trading and execution and due diligence and research, like all of that just, it melts away, right? so you can focus on what matters, which is making sure we've understood, you know, people's objectives and build the appropriate portfolio asset mix for them. But we have very few conversations about the nuts and bolts of portfolios with people because people get it. And there's more important things in life than to try to win a game that's not likely to win anyways. You've got better things to do, I would hope.
Yeah.
Now, if you enjoy stock picking, doing research, I have nothing opposed to that. That's fine. Maybe allocate a small part of your portfolio and do that. If someone's truly passionate, think they can be the next Warren Buffett, great. Like I've no issue with it. I'm just saying it makes sense to me to get a framework like this that is logical, rational, evidence-based, cheap, tax efficient.
Yeah.
And you can work with for the rest of your life.
But did it change the way you thought about other stuff in your life? Because for me, it just brings a lot of clarity. That sort of mindset brings a lot of clarity to, you know what, I can't predict the future. A lot of things are driven by luck. It just brings a lot of clarity to the, you know, what can I control? What can I not control? I don't think it's just an investment philosophy.
I realize it sounds arrogant saying this, but I've always felt that I'm pretty humble. So it's kind of a relief for me to not have to always know everything. And there's so much you don't know. Like we know 0.00001% of whatever's been written or thought of in the world, right? Like we really don't know very much. We may be deep in our own subject matter. I'm not saying we're ignorant, but it's like, there's so many things we don't know that you need a certain level of humility kind of with everything that's always going on, right?
Yeah.
Be it economics or politics or pick the subject, right? There's so much to learn.
It's true.
Business, how to build a team, how to build a business, how to market a business, how to pass it on to the next generation. I mean, these are the things that I've been pretty obsessed with lately. There's
yeah.
so much to learn. And no one owns the truth necessarily.
You know, this started out as you looking after some clients and building a portfolio of clients for yourself, a book of business. But now, you know, then you start building a team and you're managing that team, and then you end up becoming the majority owner of the company. So what's that journey been like, and what have you learned along the way?
So this has been, I mean, you know our story, you know the team, many of the team members. I tell you, the biggest thing is that talent, helping talent discover what they can do and accomplish is incredible. And that knows no age bounds. I've heard so many people say, oh, you can't do those kinds of things until they're 40 years old or 20 years in the business or all these, you know, our team, many of them, they're unbelievable when they joined us in like low 20s, mid 20s. Hmm. And they've only gotten better and better and better with time. And now we're seeing the next generation come up behind them, which is unbelievable to see. So I get so much pleasure out of, you know, being a small part of helping give them the platforms so they can discover who they are, what talents they have, give them, you know, as Daniel Pink talks about, give them the autonomy to become masters of what they're doing, give them kind of that big mission purpose. None of us know everything, but if you give them that framework and that ability and that freedom, right? Come to me with answers, don't come to me with problems. Let people figure stuff out. Yes, mistakes will happen. So what? Let's experiment on stuff. The podcast, it was an experiment. Ben and I just said, let's try it. Why not? It could completely fail. It didn't. We tried so many things, and experimenting, frankly, getting out that creativity to solve problems is so much fun. So that's probably one of the biggest things I've learned over the past decade. And then that's only accelerated with the guests we've had on lately. On the podcast. I mean, look at the people you've interviewed over the years. It's incredible. I'm sure every one of those interviews has had an impact on you in some little way, gets added to the brick wall in your brain, right? That's been incredible.
Yeah. So let's talk about the podcast for a moment, because, you know, you started, I remember when you started it, I think I was in, I was guest number, I don't know, 10 or I was something in that range, right? You know, I was pretty early on. You're up to like 180 something now, I think.
Almost 200. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people have gotten into this space of creating content. It's the thing now. If you're you know, if you're a business, if you serve the public in any way, whatever, whoever your audience is, you, you write a blog, you send out a weekly newsletter, you, you know, you, you create a podcast, but that doesn't mean anybody's going to read it or listen to it. So how have you been able to turn this into something that's had such success?
I mean, Ben and I are open to try anything.
And Ben Felix, by the way, Felix, the co-host of the podcast.
And, yeah. I mean, Ben is technically brilliant and he's an unbelievable communicator. So that is at a huge part of it. Like, call it what it is. He's incredible.
Yeah. And he's got some great videos that have been watched a kajillion times on
his trump the podcast.
Yeah.
Probably 10 to 1.
Videos about, you know, financial decisions. Should you buy or rent a house? You know, those kinds of things. Yeah.
So that's certainly a big part of it. And then, you know, I've always been kind of a networker, right? I mean, much how you and I met. So it was going along. We didn't really have a format in hindsight. And then how about we have a guest? Okay. So we asked a few guests like yourself, you're kind enough to come on. And then you get another guest and it kind of just, okay, let's go with this format. And then it just started building and getting picked up on Reddit and conversation boards. And then we decided to experiment with the community boards. Now we have like 500,000 participant events per month on our community board. Like, it's an unbelievably exploding community board. Recently, we decided to try, I had an idea of having a reading club. You know, I read this book about people are reading less and less. Let's have a reading club to try to motivate people to read. Again, just an experiment. We found a software. We now have over 400 people in our 22 books and 22 challenge, which is super fun, right? So it's another place for people to meet up and get ideas and reviews. But the thing about the podcast is it's not about the numbers. The numbers honestly don't really matter. And if they matter, I would argue that maybe your content may not be the focus of your efforts. Like, you have to love doing it because it's, as you know, every single week.
Yeah.
The show must go on. So it's a lot of work. But the biggest benefit for us has been the unintended consequences. Like the people for our team that we've met, talent that we've met through the podcast, people hear about the mission, hear about what we're up to, and they've just reached out and said, I want to be part of it. Incredible talent. We never saw that. You know, to help train advisors, you know, Ben does a deep dive on monetary policy, for example, or pick a topic. This week was modern portfolio theory, very deep dive, very tactical dive, beautifully explained. There's a perfect example of something, you know, if you happen to call me up one day, Mark, and said, I want to know about modern portfolio theory. It's like, well, here is a 48-minute segment that will explain it perfectly.
Yeah.
I know that may not be your thing, but a lot of people do have these kinds of questions. So we kind of chip away at questions that come up. Also helps with, you know, we didn't do it to build the business. We do it because we love doing it. But we hear from a number of people because the reality is it's a very nerdy, niche-y podcast. So we don't expect the active listeners to become clients, but they know people. They're often influencers.
Right.
So we'll hear from people who said, yes, I sold my business and my son-in-law said I should talk to you. So that happens fairly often. But it's been an incredible creative experience, learning, meeting all kinds of neat people, and just that game. And I'm sure you're doing it now with Digging Deep. It's like, who's up next? How do I meet them? How do I get connected? And
yeah.
And you're always skimming for, that's a neat book. They'd be a great guest. For example, I saw someone who was on the podcast was friends with someone and promoting the new book, Get It Done by Ayelet Fishbach. So I asked, it was Katie Milkman who wrote the book, How to Change, phenomenal book. So I emailed Katie and said, how can I meet Ayelet? She said, I'll introduce you. So within 10 minutes, we had her booked on the podcast. Phenomenal book. We did a goal setting kickoff show at the beginning of this year.
Great.
It was sensational. It's just so much fun to find these interesting guests. And then we put a fair amount of effort. And again, kudos to Ben. Like, the questions are we get feedback from the guests and maybe they say it to everybody. I don't know, but they seem to consistently say, these are really good questions. I think that matters. And we've had a number of guests come back to us and say, you know what, you should talk to that person. And like, these are people that are really hard to try to get on. Like, we've had some pretty big names in the world of finance. So that's been really, really rewarding.
Good for you. You talked about a 100-year vision for your business. So tell me how that came about and what that looks like and how it changes, because I'm a big believer in this. I think it completely changes how you think about your work and what you're doing and the company you're running. So I always encourage people to think this way, but what was the experience like for you to get to this point?
I could not agree more. I mean, that's always been kind of in the back of my mind, but when we read the book by Simon Sinek, The Infinite Game,
yeah,
that really crystallized it for us. And the point of the book is, in The Infinite Game, is you're playing your game with your rules within the law, of course. I'm not suggesting anything unlawful, but you get to set the rules of how your business will evolve over time. And this, again, accelerated with this evolution, with this unbelievable team. And now we're up to 70 people in our team of incredible, driven, motivated, interesting, fun, nice, kind, caring people. Why would I, like, my value set is not to go and say, thanks for the effort, we're going to sell out now. Like, that just doesn't, it doesn't, not, if that's someone else's objective, that's fine, but that's not us. So we're creating what works for us. What is the kind of succession plan that we want to have for the 100-year vision? Well, we believe in broad ownership of the company, right? To deliver our service, it takes more than advisors. It takes all the different areas of the company, be it finance, compliance, operations, marketing, culture, research. You need all these people, technology. You need all these people to deliver service. Well, why should they not all be part of the ownership of this thing going forward? Yes, it creates other challenges, like how are you going to manage it? How are you going to manage the board? But when you view it as this 100-year vision, you start thinking about, well, what could this look like? And it's not up to the current generation to figure this all out. It's to kind of, as I said earlier, be the vessel, be the conduit to figure some stuff out, but to really take a lot of input from the next generation. Like, we're extremely transparent, extremely open about everything. Like, we share with the company the financials and all the numbers, the sales of the company internally, the ownership of the company. So to me, that's really important. So those are all the pieces of the puzzle for our game that works for us. And then it really helps to attract talent. If this isn't how you view the world, you're not going to be happy here. So it gets this alignment of the team as well.
And how does it affect the decisions you make? Because I think there's, you know, we were talking earlier about how people's focus is getting shorter and shorter, their attention spans. I feel like the decision-making timetables are getting shorter and shorter all the time, that there's a fixation on immediacy in the next quarter or the next month or the next week. When you have a 100-year vision for your business, how does it change the framework for the decisions you make?
That's interesting. I mean, we're pretty patient. We're not, you know, my style, pretty patient, pretty, like, I'm not in a rush to get certain sales targets. I mean, we just systematically want to build a great business that delivers great service and is a great experience for the team. That's what we're trying to do here. And you think about it, if you're seeking to consume financial advice, you want your advisor to be in a good place too, right? Like they have to be in the right frame of mind when they meet with you, because how they are feeling when they meet with you matters. Are they the right frame of mind? Are they stressed about making commission targets? Are they stressed about something that might be going in the business?
Yeah, about hitting the numbers this quarter or whatever. Yeah.
I don't think you want that framework. And I think that's happening a lot, you know, in certain sectors of the Canadian marketplace where you have to hit the numbers each month. We believe it matters if you're dealing with an owner. Someone that's an owner is here for long term. So we open up ownership. And you know, once you meet certain hurdles in terms of time at the company, which isn't that long, we open up ownership to the entire company.
Yeah. I just love the horizon that, you know, if you're making decisions based on an expectation that the company is going to outlast you, you're going to make different decisions than if you're making decisions based, you know, purely in terms of what you can get from the company, right? As an owner, as an executive, as whatever role you're playing. Whatever decisions you're making, whether it's about your business or about anything else in life, if your timeline is 100 years that means you're making the decision based on something beyond your lifetime. So inherently, it has to be an unselfish decision because you're making the decision about a future that doesn't include you, right?
That's a good point. It's a very good point. It's an incredible thing to think about what this could become and what these people can create over time. And it's different because it's a very intimate service. Like, you know a lot about the people that you're helping, and it really matters. Like, we have a fiduciary obligation to do what we think is best at as fair a price as possible, make sure that we are a viable business. I'm not saying otherwise, because of course our clients want us to be viable, but reasonably viable, like not a crazy, you know, cash cow, right? Because I believe in our business, if you're too much of a cash cow, you're A, not investing enough in your people, or you're overcharging your clients.
Right.
Right. Well, you need good people to sit in front of you that have good headspace, that have great support. They're able to take time off and know they're not going to come back to a swamped email inbox. Like, there's certain things that you should want to have in place in your advisory firm. And I mean, you know, our business, we have one set of clients. We have one investment philosophy. We have one team. It's not like you work for Cameron's team and, well, you're on Ben's team and they do things this way and they do things that way. No, it's all one. And that matters. It matters for consistency. It matters for backup, for training, for next generation. It does matter. Now, it may not be for everyone. Then you would choose not to work with us.
Right.
But if you value those things, I think those parts of the model are pretty compelling.
You mentioned your relationship with Shopify and the people at Shopify. There was an article in the Globe and Mail written about it 5 years ago. So it's public knowledge. We're not sharing anything that hasn't been reported on. But can you just talk a little bit about that and how it came about, and how, I mean, you described it as a lucky event for you. You kind of met some senior people at Shopify at the right time. They bought into your investment philosophy. They started referring other people at Shopify to you. And next thing you know, as Shopify is growing and growing, you're getting more and more people whose wealth is increasing really rapidly. And all of a sudden, that's a big part of your business, right?
So much luck. So much luck. And so, I have so much gratitude and respect for who they are, what they built. And that was it. So I had that initial couple meetings, and then it was RSP season. This is like 2012. And I mean, people didn't know what a stock option was, let alone what it could be worth, right? So it was nothing. Like, there was not an inkling with, maybe some of the people had, but they didn't share it with me. Didn't know, but we were doing RSP contributions of $3,000. Like, why would you have a minimum? We're just here to help people, right? And our business was, I don't know, 1/20th of what it is now, at right. most, maybe even 1/30th. Like, it was tiny. There's two of us, right? Back then, Laura and I. And you start meeting people and helping people, and you kind of hanging around the office enough, and you knew the office there. It was pretty cool. And you go to the happy hours on Fridays and, oh, can you help me? Because I heard you worked with them, and you just met more and more people. And then, oh, they have an office in Toronto and office in Montreal. And then other members of the team started going to the other offices, and it just kept their head down, kept delivering great service. Basically every request we got, we would do. Can you come visit? I mean, there's hundreds, possibly thousands of office visits, even multiple times in a day, going back and forth. And it was truly unreal. And just such wonderful people. And the common thread, as I think back, is like, the philosophy makes sense. I think most people can agree with that. But their style is to go down, do a deep dive, understand it, done. I'm going on to something else where I can add value somewhere else. This is done. Cameron's got it. Their team's got it. I'm on to something else. Now, you can't screw up. They're super sharp. They hold you very accountable. So I'm not saying it's a free ride at all. But yeah, we're pretty proud of how we've been able to keep up with, you know, who and how they became.
Yeah. But I love that thought process of, you know, they They want to understand everything about it, but then once they do, they're leaving it to you, right? There's such a great philosophy in that, not just, you know, in choosing your investment advisor, but in choosing anybody who's going to help you in any role in your life, in hiring an employee and whatever, just to sort of say, I'm going to make sure you're the right person to look after this. But then once I know that, I'm going to leave you alone to do it. And I'm going to worry about something else, right?
Well, think back to then. Look what Shopify has accomplished since then. They did have something better to do than tinker with a portfolio. It was a good call. If you don't believe you can beat the markets and you can add value over here, pretty smart call.
And what have you learned from watching them at work, watching them grow and being close to that success story?
Keep your head down, do good work, be creative, accept chaos. I think they're playing a long game, have a good story. Like, they have an incredible storytelling at Shopify, in my opinion. Realize that you can make a change. I mean, this company started from like nothing, and look at the impact they've had on the planet, on commerce. Like, if that isn't inspirational to anybody, like, how can that not be inspirational? Think of all the impacts on so many people, so many businesses, so many entrepreneurs. It's absolutely staggering, the impact, the global impact. So I guess in some way that kind of seeps into our heads. We're pretty passionate about our vision and our mission. I didn't deliberately draw a line, but I guess it comes through because, I mean, what's the saying they have? You have to be as better next year as your growth rate was. So if you're 40% bigger, you have to be 40% better. And you have to keep getting better.
Yeah.
And keep kind of changing and breaking the mold and trying stuff. They're notorious for that.
And for playing the long game, even though they're a publicly traded company, which is something that not a lot of publicly traded companies do, unfortunately.
I think that's true.
So how do you think about the role of luck in the success that you've had? Because obviously that was, and you've already described it that way, that was a lucky event that you got connected to these guys and they ended up being so successful and that spilled over into your world.
Can't wait for luck. You have to hustle. You have to give luck a chance to grow, or some saying like that, I guess. And I've always done that. Just keep trying different things. So many people, I think, look for what is that silver bullet? I don't know what the bullet is for you. You don't know what it is for you either. Just try stuff. Have fun experimenting. Call Mark. Try to get on the radio. Book ads. Do seminars. Whatever it is that you're going to try, right? Put ads in the paper. Just experiment and enjoy the process of experimenting. Like, the luck with Shopify came from connecting with bloggers early on of blogging. Like, this is back in the Yahoo days, right? Where you actually had to look in the byline to see, because there wasn't a contact button on blogs, right? So I ended up connecting with people, and that was in the end the connection to them. Total, even meeting that person who made the connection was a total fluke. But I'm just kind of curious. I'm kind of always nuzzling around for opportunities and ideas. It's just so much fun, because especially in a town like Ottawa, where so many people are interconnected, and like, who does Mark know and what does Mark do? And like, it's easier with things like LinkedIn and web and Twitter. And it's just a super fun game to connect with lots of people. And there's so many kind, giving people that have made such a huge difference, you know, be it Larry Swedrow, you know, a prolific thinker in our space in St. Louis. I emailed him when I had email back in 98, 99. He came up and spoke for us, simply because he said, you're on the same side of history as we are. Dan Solman, someone who you know from Florida, incredible author, had a huge impact as a coach on our business. Emailed him out of the blue. He flew up from Florida to come help us.
Yeah.
Multiple times. Like, there's so many good,
I think that's a big part of your story, that you reached out to a lot of people. You were always wanting to, you know, ask for help and learn from other people. But I also think, and maybe this is a good point to wrap up on, but, you know, if the Shopify thing hadn't happened, I think, you know, you maybe your business wouldn't have grown as much and you wouldn't be quote unquote as successful. But you'd still be helping a bunch of people like me, ordinary customers like me, not Shopify millionaires. And you'd be happy doing that. And it's kind of, I would compare that to, I always have, you know, I look at the entertainment industry, for example, and you'll see people who, you know, they perform on small stages. They're incredibly talented. They write their own music. They're really good, but they might be playing in front of 100 people or 200 people. And some of them, you could look at them and independently assess their talent as better than somebody who's playing in front of 20,000 people and is on Saturday Night Live as a guest performer or doing the Super Bowl or whatever. But they love what they do. They love writing music. They love performing. And they're no happier in either scenario. And maybe something caught fire and one of those people was really successful and the other was moderately successful, but they're both doing what they love and they're both happy. And I think you would have been happy in either scenario.
Absolutely. And who knows what luck I've missed? I don't know.
Yeah.
But we love the craft of what we do. We focus on the craft, focus on the long term, enjoy the people you're around. Team matters most. Without a great team, you're not going to attract any customers. And really enjoy the, you have to enjoy the journey. If you're not, like, why are you doing this? And it's not just more and more and more. Like right now, the importance of growth is to enable that transition to the next generation to make sure everyone's got, you know, fulfilling careers that they can meet their own personal goals. It's truly amazing to have worked, you know, for so long and to have it come together. Like I said earlier, last year, to come together like this and to be part of helping and watching the next generation create something that's going to be incredible no matter what happens.
Very cool. Congratulations. You've done really well, and you've done it ethically and responsibly and with integrity. And I really admire that. Thank you so much for doing this, Cameron. It's been a lot of fun.
This has been fun, Mark. I appreciate the invite.
That's Cameron Passmore. I really love so many of the messages in this conversation, like take care of people and they'll come back, or be ready when luck hits. I appreciate Cameron's perspective on luck and randomness, and I think we could all benefit from his message about not having the ladder against the wall that's on fire, not chasing after goals that are beyond our needs. I love the idea of a 100-year plan, a plan that extends beyond your life. I think it really does change the way you make decisions. And of course, huge respect for Cameron for having only 4 emails in his inbox. All right. So once again, a big thank you to Cameron Passmore for joining us on Digging Deep. And if you enjoyed this episode, I have a favor to ask. Please review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And please send it to a couple of people you think would enjoy it as well. That's going to help us reach more people and produce more great episodes. And one last thing, if you want to keep digging deep into topics and lessons like this, I have a weekly newsletter that I send out. I'm sure you already get lots of stuff in your inbox. Maybe this is one of the 4 emails in Cameron's inbox, but this one is very quick and right to the point. It is 5 very short items that I've discovered each week. It'll take you about 2 minutes to read, and it has some great lessons from experts that you can apply immediately. So please subscribe to the newsletter at letsdigdeep.com. That's letsdigdeep.com. And get ready for more great stories and powerful lessons on the next edition of Digging Deep. Thank you for listening.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.